My name is Hallie Morse. I am here today with Gilda Miros. It is Monday, November 7th. It is about 11 o'clock in the morning. We are here at the Actors Fund in Times Square, New York, here to talk for the Actors Fund, our oral history 1 of 3. Good morning, Gilda.
Good morning, Hallie. Thank you for inviting me. Thank you for listening. Hello, everybody. It's a pleasure, an honor, un placer. Gilda Miros in Spanish, Gilda Miros in English. I am going to review my life as far as my personal development as a performer, but I want a little introduction as to the whole piece of my career, and then we'll go into how I started and how it developed. Someone else wrote this. Gilda Miros' talents are both unique and extraordinary. She was without a doubt the premier performer in her field in the New York City area, stated M. Herbert Levin, senior vice president of WADO Radio, which broadcasts in the metropolitan New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut area. He added, her popularity is not a transitory phenomenon. It has been consistent over decades, and she still maintains her uniqueness as a radio personality. In a career spanning 4 decades, Ms. Miros has appeared in leading roles on the stage, in films, and television in Mexico, Puerto Rico, and North America. She has broadcasted live programs from numerous Latin American countries and has produced, directed, and narrated a variety of documentaries, including one produced during the Vietnam War. She was the first Hispanic radio personality to conduct a live 4-hour daily radio program transmitted from Miami to Los Angeles and New York for the Spanish broadcasting system. She also has produced her program Amorosamente in Sevilla, Spain, and Miami, Florida, along with New York and Puerto Rico. Ms. Miros established an audience following unequaled by any other Hispanic radio talk show host. Moreover, her prestige in the Hispanic community was partly due to the unique and particular knowledge of various Latin American cultures. Her expertise in this area allowed her to function smoothly as an interviewer of guests representing all of America, including important government officials and top-of-the-line entertainers. Gilda Miros has also narrated the Puerto Rican Day Parade for WPIX, Telemundo, and Univision, written monthly columns for Imagen magazine in New York and Selecta magazine in Miami, and as a theatrical empresario, she produced the 65th anniversary of the Sonora Matancera with 2 star-studded concerts in Carnegie Hall and Central Park in New York City in 1989. She was awarded the Medal of the Virgin of the Providence from the Archdiocese of New York City and has received many awards as Best Talk Show Host from the Association of New York City Spanish Columnists. She received the Paoli and Agua by Now trophies from Puerto Rico, as well as many other awards from her work and other different communities. Almost finished. She has also been the national campaign spokesperson for the March of Dimes, Spanish Market, as well as the Spanish campaign for the New York City iBank. And then her most recent endeavor as a performer was dubbing Mother Angelica's voice in Spanish for EWTN's Angelica Live for global distribution. Okay, that sounds great. How did it happen is the question. I'm 78 now. I have 2 boys and I want to mention them. They are my cast for today. First of all, my mom, Monserrate Rodriguez Diaz. My father, Juan Santiago, Roman. My children, Antonio A. Miros, the elder, and my little baby, Karim Miros. I have a granddaughter who's 10, Vienna Sky Dates Miros. I live in New York City now, although I've lived in New Jersey, raising my children, and in Florida, taking care of both my mother and my father, who both passed. I was a caregiver for many, many years. And during that time, God was so good that I was able to write books. I have 10 books published, and an audiobook that just published about Celia Cruz, and I published another audiobook based on my interviews. So that's me up to date. Now, I have here baptism I was born Carmen Hilda Santiago Diaz, Santurce, Puerto Rico, on Tuesday, September 20th, 1938. Baptized 18th of July, 1939, in Santurce. Now, it's interesting because I brought Art and Opera Contest, season 1955-56. Why? It's from the Metropolitan Opera Guild, presents to Carmen Santiago, Certificate of Merit for Design in Costume for an Opera, Rigoletto. I came to New York, 1946. I was 8 years old. Like so many Puerto Ricans in the 40s, poor, not very poor, but, you know, working poor. Because there was a lack of work in Puerto Rico, of employment. My mother came with my brother Nelson, that I have not mentioned. Nelson Miros, who's so wonderful. He's a talented performer and a hairstylist, and has been part of the American Cancer Society's training program as a teacher for 40 years. He tells women how to adorn themselves even if they are suffering from cancer and the effects of chemotherapy. That's my brother Nell Miros, and he's also a singer. Anyway, we were brought in by my mom to New York City, came to Manhattan, then went to the Bronx. My mom had left my father. He had a temper. They divorced. My mom came with the two little children, worked in a factory like many people did. She was a believer, though. She says, I can get ahead. And she did. And then she remarried an artist, cartoonist. And by the way, I published one of his books later on in life with his cartoons from 1945-46 during the war in Puerto Rico. Anyway, so while I was raised in the Bronx, I was always a dreamer. Although I was very shy, didn't feel very attractive, very introverted. How I've changed. Didn't speak much, felt clumsy. I was clumsy. I'm a little retarded at times, but I do well. Anyway, my mom would say, you can do it. You're learning. I learned to draw. I like to draw. I still have some paintings. And in school, I went to Washington Irving, first to public school in the Bronx, then decided that I was going to prepare a portfolio, went to Washington Irving, then it was a girls' school. I had to submit a portfolio, was approved for the art course, and that's where I got this art and opera contest in 1955. I graduated in 1957 with an art certificate or diploma. I told my mom, Mom, in school I was in a play. It was a play for the seniors, and I did comedy, and I want to be an actress now, because my mom would always read the Spanish paper to me. She would read the English and Spanish. She would sit with me in the living room, practice your Spanish, she would say. And so she would take me to the Spanish movies and to the Spanish theater, and I was bicultural, and I felt very happy with both cultures, and I loved the Bronx. I was good. The Bronx was good to me. Anyway, I said to my mother, I want to be an actress, but I don't want to be a Hollywood actress. I want to be a Mexican actress. Mexico City had a great theater and movie industry then, as did Argentina. I was impressed. I said, yes, I want to go to Mexico. My mom said, we'll have to save. I worked after school in the Five and Dime and whatever it was called then. I don't know. Woolworths, was it? No, I don't know. And I worked after school. My mom taught me to work. And she would work part-time. We would save. She says, I'm going to take you. She took me as I graduated June 1957. And we went to Mexico a month after, July 1957. The day we were going to go, there was a big earthquake in Mexico City. My mom says, I'm afraid to go to Mexico with you with this earthquake. But we decided we were going to go the day after we arrived in Mexico City. She was a brave woman. And she took me to a school which belonged to the Asociación de Artistas. So you'll know, Mexico City had an union called Asociación Nacional de Actores, called ANDA. They had an institute where they gave classes to the people that wanted to become performers. Okay, I went, I made an appointment from New York, wrote the letter. They gave me an appointment, arrived. My mom put me in a boarding house. We went to the audition. She read with me during the audition. I got in, was approved. My mom left me a little money. We didn't have much. She went back to New York. Didn't know anybody in Mexico. Didn't speak well. Was not that beautiful. But I wanted to study. And I had some new friends in Mexico. And I still conserve, I still have the documentation of my vocal and acting lessons that were given to me. People would laugh. You're New Yorican. You can't speak Spanish. You can't speak English. Well, you're just a mixed up person. I said, no, I'm not. I'm a faith person. I love God. I took my little Bible with me, my mother gave me, and I would just sit with it all day and all night after I went to classes. My faith has opened my doors, darlings, I want you to know. Determination, faith, and hard work. That's it. That's the cocktail. Anyway, when I got to Mexico, they were asking for models. All of a sudden, I was getting prettier. I don't know. I said, oh, I feel better about myself. They were asking for models. I said, yes, I'll go. Where? At the TV stations. They want models. Okay, I got a little job as a model in one of the top programs of a composer. Agustin Lara was the top composer of Mexico City. He wanted good-looking girls to dramatize his songs that were all about women. So I was appointed. I went. I got it. Then I became another model for another show. And then I got into another show by Nescafe. And I got into another show. And I got myself a little agent. She would tell the girls, yeah, let's go. Come on. I get you jobs. And I did. I started to make my own money. Then I got in a film. They wanted girls to sit next to a piano while the performers were there with their pianos and their guitars, and I got the job. God was opening doors for me. And as a matter of fact, that piano scene in that movie, 40 years later, I was interviewing a famous Argentine performer, Libertad Lamarque. I said, you know, one of my first jobs was in one of your films. I must have been 18 years old. She says, yeah. I said, I don't remember the name, but there was a piano, and you were sitting next to the piano. She says, I remember that film. She sent me the film. She had a copy of the film, and I saw myself in that scene when I was 18. And I got this when I was like 50 years old. So everything goes back to you, good and bad. Anyway, I did the rounds in Mexico. I got into theater. And then I said, I'm coming back to New York. I miss my mom. I miss my family. I miss my brother now. In New York, training, Herbert Berghoff Studio. Circle in the Square. Emil Forstin dance. And I was Instituto Cinematográfico de la ANDA, Mexico City. I started to do the rounds, and I got some bit parts. 1962, after I studied a little bit, I went to Mexico, to Puerto Rico, my hometown. And I got a job as a model, actress, MC, and announcer for Antillana de TV. That was 1962, live television. I started everything live. You couldn't make a mistake. And doors, when I least expect it, I'll go into details later, open. People said, yeah, you know what? They're looking for a girl here. Hey, you know what? Go over there. They would guide me. I would find little angels that were guiding me. I was always a believer. Then I got a soap opera at WAPA TV, 1963. Came back to New York. Then I got into Naked City. That used to be a series in New York. I got into the union. I got into SAG and I got into AFTRA. 1964, I got into The Doctors, the soap opera, every day, where this was all live, NBC, as a running part. I was one of the nurses. Okay, but I was there. And I did I Spy in Mexico City. That used to be a series on television, 1965. Then I would come back and forth from Mexico, thank God, to New York, to Puerto Rico. I would travel, always looking for my, I had my portfolio, I had my resume, I knocked on doors, and you know, there's an interesting philosophy that performers should follow. Every day I would say, how was my day? Was it a good day? Did I make good use of my time? Did I waste my day? No, I don't want to waste my day. At the end of the day, I would review what I did. I called, I sent, I did. And if I was happy with what I did, that was a good day. I was alone a lot. There's a lot of loneliness when you can't be with your family. I remember doing theater in Mexico, and I'll talk about this. Commercials. Go ahead.
You spoke briefly about your training in the city. It sounds like you had really, really wonderful training, and you trained with a bunch of different studios and different teachers. I was just wondering if you could tell us. I'd love to know more about that training and the teachers who inspired you.
Well, of course, the Herbert Berghoff studio was top of the line. It still is. You know, I don't remember the name of the teacher, but I know that they teach you about being at ease with yourself, learning your lines, because that gives you the comfort you need. You got to study. You can't bluff it. People want to be stars without studying. No, you have, your instrument is your voice and your speech. And you have to practice. You have to do exercises. You have to read out loud. You have to deal with rejection. If somebody says, you're a lousy actress, I say, well, that's your opinion. But I think I'm a good actress. Let me try again. So the training is basically your instrument is your voice, your speech, your expression, your body. And I was taught by good teachers. And you have to practice it every day. You can't let anything affect that. We all have problems at home. We don't have money. We knock on doors, they don't open the doors. But you keep on trying and keep on trying. The attitude is important. And you work in a team. It's a team effort. You have to rehearse with someone else. You have to feel good about that other person. You have to project what you feel. You have to, I learned about the method. I would learn the Stanislavski method. Okay? And you say, that I picked up at the Herbert Berghoff studio. You have to believe your part. What am I playing? Who am I? Explore it. Believe it. Incarnate it. Be it. That's a good performer. Because if you believe it, your audience will believe it. What's wonderful about the theater is this communication between the audience and the performer. When I did television, you just have to, it's a mechanical thing, of course. You know your lines, and you have to be on, and you have to feel good about what you're doing. But if you make a mistake on live TV, what's going to happen? You can't make a mistake. You can't afford to make a mistake. There's a lot of stress. And in films, I learned how to work with a prop, with a electronic prop in my ear. And they tell you, move to the right, sit down, get up, and you're lying. You get up and you say, hello, how are you? And you get up slowly, very nicely, and hello, how are you? And it's a training. It's a technical issue. You must deal with instructions. The director's job is to get everyone in place. It's the whole, you're not the star, even if you're the star. You are part of a group effort. Ego gets in our way. I've had ego. I felt I was the top of the line. And you know, maybe you are, but you gotta be a little more flexible. You can't be a prima donna. I have fought. I have been angry. I walked out on a film, motion picture. I walked out. Didn't want to work with you. You got to make sure you have a good agent that you can trust. I had people steal from me, lie to me, use me, This is all part of my 78 years as a performer. But you know what? I'm happy. I'm glad that I had this opportunity to share. The performer is like a teacher. Because what you say, people believe. You should be truthful to what you say. You are a messenger. What does the playwright want to say? Are you really doing it correctly, the intention, all that? Let me go back to, I did commercials for radio in English and Spanish. Crest toothpaste, Café Bustelo, Coca-Cola, Sultana crackers, Quaker Oats, Puss and Boots, whatever. I got commercials. I was lucky. In English and Spanish, Coca-Cola, Nescafe, Palmolive, Crisco, Hamilton Watches. In the Life magazine, I appear with a Hamilton watch, 1963, I think. The Smithsonian took that because they worry about and they concern with advertising. Stage, Off-Broadway. When I was back and forth, Mexico, Puerto Rico, I got the first... 1963, I was off Broadway in Theater Row, 42nd Street. The play was La Barca Sin Pescador. I had the lead. There were people there. It was a fellow from Colombia, a person from Dominican Republic, because that's the way it is in New York. A Cuban and someone from Chile, from Argentina. We were all part of the elenco, the cast. La Barca Sin Pescador. 1963, off Broadway. Then I went to Puerto Rico. In Puerto Rico, I did Al Inciso H, 1962, as a festival player. I did Maribel and the Strange Family as a support, 1962. In Miami, I did, let me see, El Viejo Llegó a las Cuatro, 1965. In LA, I did Adam and Eve on the stage. And Que Me Toquen El Bandoneón, I've done films. In 1962, I did Romance in Puerto Rico. In 1964, La Vendedora de Amor, lead, my first lead in New York. I did El Mal, The Rage, 1965 in L.A. Las Mujeres Arpías, Mexico, 1965. Invasión de las Marcianas, 1966 film. Luna de Miel in Puerto Rico, Puerto Rico, 1966. Contrabandistas del Caribe, Miami, 1966. Dos Pintores Pintorescos, 1966. Now, your turn, Holly. What would you like to know in specific?
Sure. So I have two questions for you. You know, you have been able to go between theater and film and commercial and radio and all these things. Twofold, was this something that you had to really fight for? Were you always striving to do more film despite perhaps your agents wanting you to do more theater? Or how did you have to work to craft that career? And also, was there ever a particular role that you felt you had to fight for?
That's interesting because most actors don't become broadcasters or talk show hosts. They do narration, they do voiceover, they do commercials, but they don't go from one to the other extreme. Usually stay in your track. And I never thought I would go from being an actress, film, where I also had to sing dub. I did sync, lip sync. Oh my God, I can't believe it. I did dancing when I was a lousy. I did salsa at the Palladium. I was a salsa dancer, but I was not a professional dancer. But the film La Vendedora de Amor, they did choreography for me, and I had to sing with the bikini, dance with the bikini afro. Imagine? Anyway, it's still playing. So whether you do it good or bad, it's still playing online, whatever. This is interesting, this question. My personal life was not good. I was lonely. You know, I remember being in the theater in Mexico City, the top star. One doing Pasión Gitana, a soap opera, Pasión Gitana, as a lead on television in Mexico. It was playing all around the nation and doing theater. What was the name of it? Whatever. The show was over and I was alone. Somebody sent me flowers. I had an admirer, but there was no one waiting by the stage door. I took my taxi home, and I had an apartment in Mexico City with two maids. I had everything I wanted. I had everything I wanted. Did films, went out, had a wonderful time. But no, nothing. It was a lonely personal life. I had my mom that loved me, my brother who was then a Marine. My brother was different places he had to go to as a Marine. Anyway, I said, I need a personal life. I came back to New York. Then I was asked to go to Puerto Rico to do a film. And I met somebody during that film and I got married. When you get married, it changes a little bit because you're not independent anymore. When you become pregnant, it also changes because you got to think about your baby. That changed my life. I had my little baby, but I still did a couple of things as an actress. I was still an actress and did commercials. Am I getting ahead of myself? Wait a minute. No, I'm not. Anyway, I divorced. I separated first from my divorce. I had my baby, stopped working for a year, had my baby, separated from my husband. And then it's interesting because there was something that happened. You see, as performers, everything affects us, what's happening around us. For example, television was starting in the West. And I must go into this. And Marisol Malaret became Miss Universe in Puerto Rico. One of the producers in Puerto Rico said, I want to broadcast the first satellite transmission of a special show because of our Miss Universe. So he made an arrangement with SIN, Spanish International Network, in New York, where they were going to broadcast Marisol's reception in Puerto Rico. Okay? I was the owner, René Anselmo, a visionary. I told you this before, Holly. He was one of the first to buy space in a satellite, Pan American satellite. He was one of the owners, by the way. Knew that I was an actress, so he asked me to co-host. I said, okay, I'll co-host, because he knew I was an actress, film, they knew me. I did the show, 1 hour, 2 hours, Puerto Rico, New York. After that, he said to me, you know, you did it so well, I want you to do a talk show every weekend. Domingos en el Uno, Sundays in New York, SIN, Sundays 1-5, every week. And I told you this before, Holly, when I was asked to do the show, I found that I was pregnant again with my second little boy. And I told him, I can't accept, I'm sorry, because I'm pregnant. Then when you were pregnant, it was like, God, this was 1970. You know, you don't show these pregnant women on the air very much. He says, you know what? You're going to take it and you're going to do it anyway with your pregnancy. And he had me co-host and produce the show. That changed my life. That's answer to your question. Because then I had to stop acting and become a talk show host for television. And I had to, and I gave birth. I worked the whole pregnancy. And I did something most people don't do. What was it? I waited till the last minute, working, driving to New Jersey from the Bronx, from Queens. I lived in Queens, risking my life and my health and everything to comply with the station and comply as a mother. My baby came. They came to see me at the hospital. And they transmitted from the hospital, the birth of the baby. It was a beautiful moment. And I'm glad I have my two little boys. But after that, I stayed home for a little while. I decided I wanted to go to Vietnam. I don't know why, but I did. I wanted to do a documentary on the suffering of the soldiers in Vietnam. Then I wanted to go do another documentary that I love. I wanted to interview the people in jail. Don't ask me why. I'm like a social worker in a documentary industry. My mom, God bless her, took care of my little boys. She stayed. She took care of them in Queens while I went in and went with USO. Later on, we'll talk about that. And then with the prisons, the tombs, Ellis Island. After that, I got a little depressed, of course, with all this. I decided I'm leaving theater, I'm leaving everything, I'm going to be a mother, and I'm going to take care of my little boys. Then I went over to move to Massachusetts to set up a boutique in Hyannis to get away from everything. You know how performers we are. Get away from everything. Forget about being a performer. Mother, I was mother, number one.
So you made a conscious decision.
Yes.
To say goodbye.
Leave everything. Leave goodbye and just go do and try to set up commercial. I was lousy in business. Came back. Tried to do one in Puerto Rico. Went to Puerto Rico, set it up. Lousy. Bad.
What is this that you were setting up?
A boutique. I had a boutique in Puerto Rico and I had a boutique in Massachusetts in Hyannis. Came back to New York. I was in Puerto Rico a year. I was 6 months in Hyannis. Came back to New York, opened a boutique in then New Jersey. Boutique, no good. Last boutique, Queens, in front of Macy's. Boutique. And no good. I said, I have to support my children. I don't have a husband. I didn't want my husband. So thank God I was liberated from my husband. I have to support them. What do I do? I'm not a performer. I didn't feel that I was a performer anymore. Isn't that amazing? Why? I don't know why. I said, I have to work. I went to the government of Puerto Rico and asked for a job in New York because I got to be with my children. They said, you're going to be a Puerto Rican TV and radio specialist in the city of New York in the Commonwealth of Puerto Rico office. I said, okay, you have a job, you get a salary, I know how I can support my children. I forgot about everything in the arts. But look at how God works. There was a plan for me. One day I was asked by the government of Puerto Rico to go to WADO Radio for an interview. They were going to interview me about the Puerto Rican Day Parade and what the government does to help them. I didn't want to go. I said, I have to go. I have to go. I'll go. I remember taking the bus cross town to WADO. And I told you this, and I'll repeat it for the benefit. There's always things happen that will transform your life. I believe there's angels that help us when we look for it, when we ask for it, when we're open to it. There's inspiration. But you got to remember to say thank you, acknowledge and make good use of it. That is my philosophy. Anyway, I went to the interview. When I'm walking into the radio station, I bumped into a fellow. There was another fellow next to him, a man. He's, I'm the program director. Oh, hi, hi. This is the owner. I said, oh, hi, hi. I said, oh, Mr. Owner, whatever his name was. Yes, his name was Nelson Laverne. Mr. Laverne, you have such a popular radio station. I want to talk to you about something in the future. He says, okay, I'm busy now. Make an appointment. Okay, bye-bye. I went to the interview. After the interview about the Puerto Rican Day Parade, this was 1971, the program director comes to me after the show. The owner wants to speak to you. I said, really? Didn't he say I was supposed to call him? Yes, but he wants to speak to you right now. Okay, I went over. He says, what would you like to say to me, this Mr. Laverne said. I said, well, you know, you have the top of the line radio station in Spanish, but you have no programs about women or for women. He said, yes, we do. You do? It's called Mujer, woman. Really? Who does it? A man. Oh, really? Well, you see, that's the problem. You need a woman with a man or a woman to do it. Anyway, thank you, goodbye, goodbye. That's it, he told me. Next day I was offered a job and that's how I got into radio. Next question, Holly, go ahead.
Well, in just thinking about your career as an actress, what, is there a certain period of time or a specific role that stands out for you?
Yes, La Vendedora de Amor, which was my first lead in films. I did Romance in Puerto Rico as a support, 1962, when I was a model and I was an actress at the WAPA. And I did Romance in Puerto Rico. But La Vendée d'Or, then I came back to New York, and that's when I was doing The Doctors, whatever, whatever. This Puerto Rican producer came to me and said, you know, I'm looking for my lead for my next film. It's going to be all done in New York City, but you have to dance. I said, well, I'm not a dancer. I know how to dance socially, but well, don't worry. I'll take care of it. And I said, really? He gave me the script, which I still have. I can't believe I still have that script. And he said, well, Columbia Pictures is going to distribute. It's going to be top of the line. Are you ready for rehearsal? I started to rehearse dance choreography. But this man was very intelligent. He took from Cuba, there was a very famous Tropicana club in Havana. The choreographer from that club was doing my choreography. The designer from that club was doing my wardrobe. There's two top scenes where I dance the afro with the feathers and the bikini and the dancers. And there's another one where I do a, it's like a cha-cha-cha with the top performer, Tito Rodriguez from Puerto Rico. So everything was top of the line. Learned my lines, and I did that film. That film opened the door for me in Mexico. Because you have to be a star. It's difficult to go to another country and work. It isn't like, here I am, I'm a performer. No. You have to prove that you have a starring credit. Show it. Then you have to become part of the union. Pay your dues. Get permission to work. I did all that. I did all that. And then I got all my other, I've done 13 films. That's when I switched to radio and TV. So I interrupted my career, but that film was the opening. My last theater piece I don't have here, and I must say, was Mami Vanderbilt, Papi Rockefeller. This is interesting, because you asked me once, do you continue to do plays? I was on the air at WADO, W-A-D-O Radio. One of the owners, it was sold and resold, and then one of the owners was Premier Maldonado, who was a publicist and a very well author and playwright. And he had the number one publicity agency in Puerto Rico. And I say this because he would handle Pan American and Eastern Airlines. He called me one day, he says, Gilda, this must have been 1987, 86. I have a play for you. I just wrote for you. I said, really? You wrote a play? Yes, it's a comedy. It's a satire about how people think they're better because they have money. And you would have the lead. I said, this is for Bellas Artes, which is like, you know, it's like the Metropolitan Opera Guild in New York, Metropolitan Opera House. Bellas Artes. In San Juan. I said, well, I live in New York. How am I going to do this? I will fly you into Puerto Rico every weekend. Really? Yes. I'm going to send you the script. If you like it, you accept. I talked to your boss at WADO. I was doing a four-hour show every day, which I produced. 4 hours, 10 to 2, and I had broken my format. It's not going to say, hi, let's play a record. I was a DJ. I was a DJ. I know what a DJ does. You're sexy and you put the next song and this is the latest and the parade and whatever. No, I did a format where you do community 1 hour, medicine 1 hour, 2 hours entertainment from the world over. I created this format. Anyway, never done before in Spanish radio and in the world. Anyway, what happened was, I said, 4 hours, I have my little boys. I go to their games. I participate. My little boy wanted to be an actor. I was taking him to Herbert Bergdorf. I have to fly to Puerto Rico. It's a big, big thing. I did it. I did the play. Every weekend, he would send me a ticket, go rehearse. We opened. That was my last play. It must have been 1986.
For how long?
No, I did it like for a month, the show. I went to different cities in Puerto Rico. New Puerto Rico, San Juan, Ponce, whatever. But the rehearsals were before. So it was like 3 months of doing this. I couldn't enjoy Puerto Rico. I got there, hi, okay, went to the hotel, did the rehearsal, came back. Thank God I've been healthy, Hallie. Health is important. You got to take care of your body. You got to take care of your vocal cords. I had vocal cord operation once because, yeah, I was on the air. I was the, this is interesting also, very interesting, as you ask, what an interesting moment. When I was on the air in 1986, I started in 19, I was in JIT, WJIT. Daily News had published, I told you about this. I was in WADO, W-A-D-O Radio, became number one in Spanish. And this has to do with theater. That's why I'm going back to that. W-A-D-O became number one. Daily News picked up the story of the three outstanding females in radio. There was a white girl, African-American girl, and a Latina girl. That's the three of us. It was called Radio Dames, Daily News, in their Sunday special. When Infinity Broadcasting, Mel Carmazon, who was the boss with Howard Stern, was on his Infinity. He had bought WJIT Radio. He saw Radio Dames. He called, he says, he didn't call, his program director called. He says, can we have a meeting with you? I said, okay. Met with him. I met with the program director, Frank Flores. Mr. Mel Carmazon came in. 5 minutes was his conversation with me. He is now the owner of Sirius Radio. He was the owner now. He says, how much do you make? I say, I make $65,000 a year for my show. He says, I'll give you $130,000 right now, plus another $10,000 the second year, another $10,000 the third year, but you have to say yes now. And I said, yes. So I went back and said to Wal, I'm sorry, I'm leaving. You can't leave, you have a contract. Really? Mel comments on it. Mr. Comments on it, I can't accept. Mr. Comments says, I will defend you. My lawyers will deal with that contract. I was off the air for about, I guess, I don't know, 3 weeks while the lawyers had to review my contracts. Mel Carmazon, Infinity Broadcasting, won because WADO had made an error in their contract with the dates. So I was free of the non-competitive clause, went to WJIT. First time that ever happened. People would read the papers. What's going to happen? It was like a soap opera. I was on the air. And why did I say this? Oh, yeah. When I started to, this was 1986 to 1980 to 19, I was there 1987 to 1990, 3 years with Infinity Broadcasting. I started to interview Sono Celia Cruz, which I had met many years ago. I interviewed Celia, and the people that made her famous were a group from Cuba called Sonora Matancera. I had interviewed them from WADO. My mom, and I must give my mom credit, Monserrate Conesa was my mother. They would call her Mona, Montserrat. She was psychic, and I must admit this to you. I believe I've had a lot of... I am, in case you say, oh, she's a spiritista. No, no, just a minute. Okay. Spiritista, spiritism. Just let me get this straight. I am a believer of God. I am a Christian. I believe Jesus came with a motive and a reason to this earth. So I am both. But I also believe we are spirits. We have a soul. We have an entity. We are not a zombie or a body. After death, the soul survives. I must say this because this is important. When I went to Mexico, when I went to Puerto Rico, I was always believing the angels and the good spirits helped me. And whoever knows me personally knows this is my philosophy. I've had a lot of divine intervention in my life. You say to yourself sometimes, what a great idea I had. You never say, what a great inspiration. What does inspiration mean? In spirit. Comes from the invisible. Doesn't come from next door neighbor. And when you have a wonderful idea that you know it's good, and you follow through and you pursue, and it comes true, you usually don't say, oh, thank you for that wonderful idea I had. You forget. Don't forget. Anyway, so my mom says, look, all these people you interview, I have an interview. I have 9 interviews from 1978 in radio. Save them. They are oral history, just like what I'm doing today. These people will be gone, forgotten. They gave their talent, their all. They made history in different fields. Save that. My mom would tell me. So I would save the cassettes, carry them around as I moved. The loads of cassette, people say, you have so much junk. Why do you carry this around? Because I felt there was something there important. Anyway, so I interviewed Celia, that everybody. And now today I showed Holly. I got approved after 13 years, a project after 13 years I had dreamed about. Celia Cruz and Sonora Matancera in audio format will be available to the world. And that's a beautiful thing. I can die tomorrow and happily. Beautiful, thank you. Anyway, why do I mention this? Because then this person took me to Miami. Look what happened. Look at this. I was at JIT making a whole bunch of money, living with a house in Jersey with my two little boys. My mom took care of my mom. She took care of me, the babies. And all of a sudden, I got a call from Florida. I was on the air. 1987. Hey, Hilda, this is Raul Alarcón from SBS. We're doing satellite radio from Miami to LA to New York, and we need you. I said, what? He says, like next week. Really? I said, I can't. I have a contract. I make a lot of money now. He says, I'll match what you make. Really? I said, okay, let me see what my contract says. I was able to break it. God was also again with me. I got a wonderful lawyer. I was able to break my contract with WJIT, Infinity Broadcasting, Mel Carmazon, who was the top man in radio in New York. Howard Stern had the other studio next to me, face to face. That's the way it was. He did English, I did Spanish. He says, I'll send you a contract. He says, come down. I said, no, you send me the contract. Ladies and gentlemen, you need a contract. You need a contract. Otherwise, people will steal it from you. And I must say this because when I produced, when I was doing Celia Cruz, Sonora Matancera, I decided I was going to become a producer of live. No, I was going to. No, that's not true. I was going to produce their 65th anniversary concert in Carnegie Hall. I wanted to do this. And in Central Park, 1986. I was working on the air. And I said, I'm going to do it. How do I do it? I don't have money. I will mortgage my house. I mortgaged my house. Took the money. Produced the concert in Carnegie Hall, June 1986. I talked to a partner, a person that was going to be my partner. He was going to record this famous, unique show of Sonora Matancera and Celia and all the stars that I brought in from all over America. I brought them in. I got them visas. They came in. I had never done this before. I was insane, and I did it. My partner recorded and made a deal with a TV station for the, because then I said, okay, I'm going to produce the Carnegie Hall one, but I'm going to give it free to the city of New York for people that can go to Carnegie Hall, that don't have the money. So I'm going to give a free concert in the band shell 1996, I spoke to, you know, Lin-Manuel with the Hamilton fame. His father, Luis Miranda Jr., was the assistant to Edward Koch. He was director of Hispanic Affairs, Luis Miranda Jr. He got me a proclamation from the city of New York, Lin-Manuel's father. He got me the band shell, which was the last time it was used, that I can use for my show. I went to lunch with Edward Koch, with my mom, to Gracie Mansion to discuss this because of Luis Miranda. And he brought Edward Koch to do a segment in my show every week. This is Lin-Manuel's father, Luis Miranda. God bless him. Anyway, so I was on a roll. You know what happened? We did the show. It was a success. We did the show in Central Park. It was a success. It was recorded on LP, cassettes. It was done on VHS, then a DVD. Then I was asked to go to Miami. So I left the project in my partner's hands. I didn't have time. Went to Miami. The lawyer that was supposed to make the contract between my partner and me, that we were partners in everything, I had invested, had a problem with his wife, and that contract was never signed. So the guy kept my recording, the video, and it's still here, selling it online. From 1986 to 2016, they're still selling my product online. I don't get a penny. I don't get a penny. So there you go. Lesson to be learned. Performers, most performers don't care about money. A true artist doesn't care about money. They care about the art. That's the true performer. We need money to survive. We need money even to buy makeup, to buy a wardrobe, to pay our classes. But we're always strapped. We're always broke. We're always sharing. Because if you're offered a great part, it's a great part. It's lousy work, lousy salary. That is the performer. Mistake. You have to make sure you get your contract, that you know what you're signing, that you are secure. Then, that's it.
Wow. Thank you so much. We are just about out of time. So, before we end this first interview, I just want to thank you once more so much for your time today. And is there anything that you would like to add or suggest that I think about for next time?
We'll keep it for next time. Thank you for listening. God bless you. Amorosamente.
Thank you.